हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So we have to understand that there are no material solutions to material problems. That's the first thing we have to understand. That there's no such thing as a perfect material world. You can't make it perfect. You understand? Because it's designed to not be. Right? We can't go against the original engineering. Right? Because it functions by the modes of nature. And Krishna controls those modes, so it's designed to give you trouble. Right? It's temporary, it gives you trouble, right? What are the illusions that the living entity has? Right? So the important thing is that you have your existence and you have your happiness, right? Satchitananda, right? So how are you going to, in an existence you can act and then you can get happiness, right? So this existence and this happiness are prominent principles, right? So, then one will have the illusion that, because the soul thinks they're eternal, and the understanding of being happy is a natural principle, then the illusion is Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. These two illusions of the living entity. Right? So he thinks the material world's eternal, so therefore life is eternal rather than everything's temporary. And Ananda Brahma, that I can become happy here. When you actually can't, right? It's simply we define that this situation will make me happy. And as long as I define it that way, if that situation comes up, I consider myself happy. But if I don't define that that situation makes me happy, then when that situation comes up, I'm not happy. Right? Hence what Prabhu's previous question, people fall in love and people fall out of love. It's simply the same situation, but one they say this will make me happy and the other you're not identifying that way. So it has nothing to do with the senses, the sense objects, the facilities you have, anything like that. It's only because you identify this will make me happy that it does. As soon as you change that this does not make me happy, it doesn't make you happy anymore. It's that simple. I mean, in practice it's a little more difficult, but the principle is that simple. You understand? So there is no such thing. It's meant to, one, it's the prison for the wayward souls who think that they're God. And so since they're not God, then Maya, you know, spends her time kicking them around the block until one day they understand, hey, I'm not doing the kicking, so I'm not God. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that that's what we have to learn. So that's why then the Vedic system is not how to be happy in the world, it's how to connect yourself to Krishna. Because that's the only thing that'll actually make the soul happy. Right? Krishna being happy, us being part and parcel of Krishna, we become happy. Example given of water the root of the tree, and the leaves are happy. Water the leaves all day, they won't become happy. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Is we have to understand that that's how happiness works. Right? Not exactly as, Pharrell says, but whatever. You understand? So, that's the whole point, is you sorry. You have to know what is actual happiness. And that is serving Krishna. Therefore, the Vedic literatures give how a human being in the material world can deal with God's creation and all other themselves and all other living entities in a way that they can engage it all in Krishna's service. Right? That's the whole point. That's actually what the Vedic literatures are for. It's not for something less than this. It's not, oh, if we do all this, it'll make the devotees happy, and then they can be Krishna conscious. No, because if we're saying material happiness, then you can be Krishna conscious, we're saying karma creates bhakti. Or if we have this knowledge and all that, then we can do then we're saying jnana creates bhakti. Bhakti is independent. It functions on its own. Independent from karma and jnana. Right? That's why it's called causeless mercy that we came into contact with devotional service. Right? Otherwise, we can find all kinds of reasons why I became a devotee. I was so smart, I was so this, I was a real searcher, I was a... Yeah.
When somebody takes up bhakti into their lives, till the time he connects directly to bhakti in the sense of pure devotion service, the higher taste one receives.
Right.
It takes time.
Yes.
So, meanwhile... They'll not be able to experience the happiness.
No, but you can experience less distress. Because material happiness is only removal of distress, so you can see it's superior. Right? Let's say you sit down to a meal of your favorite preparation. Okay? So, will you be happy?
Removes the distress. It removes the distress of hunger.
Yes. Now what happens if you've just finished eating and you're full and you just ate some ordinary stuff and then someone comes along with your favorite preparation, huge amounts of it. Hey, I brought this for you. Can you be happy? No. Because there's no distress to remove. Right? Unless you have the distress of being tired. Laying down in a bed doesn't make you happy. You understand? The material world is, happiness is simply a removal of a pain. So that's why it's not actual happiness. See, but when happiness in connection with Krishna, that's positive because he's real. That's actual. That's why it says the happiness you gain here then is not so much. And then the happiness of liberation then is so much, it's like an ocean compared to a drop of, you know, Lord Brahma's happiness. But this ocean is like a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Because the happiness of the ocean of Brahman is a limited ocean, not an unlimited one. So how do you get so much more happiness? Right? Does that make sense? So that means we're saying, oh, but they get so much more happiness. That's because so much more pain is there. Lord Brahma has to maintain the whole universe. He wakes up in the morning and it's all destroyed. He has to recreate it. But you wake up in your morning, your house is like it was last night. You know, maybe the dog knocked over something or something like that. But, you know, it's basically like it was the night before. You know, you just, you know, your hair is funny and your breath smells bad. But, you know, you'll work that out. He wakes up in the morning and the whole universe is destroyed. He has to start all over again. Right? So, that's why his happiness is more. When he does get it all together, then okay. So he's got 14 rather large ducks to put in order. Does this make sense? So, that's why we're saying is that in Krishna consciousness, even though we may not be tasting so much of the happiness of Krishna, of Krishna, but we're removing the pain of the material world, and that removal by Krishna consciousness is greater than the removal by the material processes. So we can actually see the superiority. Does this make sense? Because what we do is we lose the need for it. And that itself is a much happier position. Right? But at the same time, there is some taste. Because bhava itself... See, bhava is the bud of prema. But now, to extend devotional service down to those that are conditioned, then it can't be anything other than bhakti itself. Right? But it can't be bhakti in the form of prema because we don't have. So it has to be the form of the bud. But it won't be that full manifestation of the bud. It's a part of the manifestation of the bud. So therefore, it's bhava that extends all the way down to, you know, shraddha, then sadhu sangha, you know, bhajana kriya. So the taste one gets there, the happiness, that's actually coming from Krishna consciousness. But it's just in a small amount. So the main thing you notice is you have faith rather than that happiness you got. You know, how nice the association of devotees, how nice the process is. Right, how you appreciate the anartas going away, how being fixed in devotional service is nice. So only when you get to taste, then it starts taking on its natural form. Right? But it's not enough to call it bhava, it's just called taste. Then a little bit more than that, then it's called attachment. When that increases more, where ecstasy is the prominent, then it's called bhava. You understand? So there is a taste. It's just a matter of we tend to forget very quickly. Right? Because we're conditioned that the material will make us happy, when actually it's not. Spiritual will make us happy. So, with practice, that's why the more we associate with the devotees, the more we practice, especially the direct activities of devotional service, the more we start to be able to compare the tastes. Till one day we can actually see the superiority of the taste of devotional service over the mundane. Mundane may be very intense, but it doesn't mean it's superior. Does that make sense?
How do we experience, the ignorance is there, all the time it's covering up.
But the soul is technically not, the conditioning is the soul's acceptance of the conditioning. You identify with it. But the soul's eternal, the soul's always liberated. This concept of being conditioned and then becoming liberated is actually not real. Because the soul always is itself. But we identify with. That's why then we have the symptoms. And so someone who identifies, you deal with them in that way. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the child. The child has dressed themselves up like, you know, like Arjuna, and they have their bow and arrow and all that. So how do you talk to him? You say, you know, he says, I'm Arjuna, you know, this and that. And then you tell the kid, you're not Arjuna, you're just a stupid kid thinking you're Arjuna. Is that how you deal with kids? No. Is he Arjuna? No, but how do you deal with him? Ah, Arjuna's there, like that, yes, so, you know, where's Krishna, where's your chariot, you know, like that, right? So that's how you deal with conditioned souls. They think they're conditioned, so you deal with them that way. And according to their conditioning, that's how you do. They think, I'm really smart, so you deal with them as an intellectual. I'm, you know, have great influence, you deal with them as an administrator. I'm very rich, so you deal with them as a businessman. I am so expressive, you deal with them as an artist. You understand? I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a, you know, that's how you feel. Right? If it barks, you deal with it like a dog. Right? Yeah, unless it's your mother-in-law, but that's another, we won't get into that one. You understand? Does that make sense? So, the whole point is the soul always is, so that's the nature of the soul to be able to deal, to appreciate the spiritual platform, because that is the natural platform. Right? The more we're covered, the less we do. That's why then we always distribute prasad. Because even if they didn't understand anything about the kirtan, the lecture, at least they'll take prasad and do some devotional service. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure that there's some purifying benefit just from the transcendental words bouncing off their head. But, you know, you get more if it enters into the ear, and then more if it goes into the heart. But if not, the prasad, that works for everybody. You know, even if it barks, feed it prasad. It responds. You understand? Shadika? Yes. Very enthusiastic.
You started right now by saying that there are no real material solutions to problems, and ultimately only when one satisfies Krishna and serves Krishna, one actually starts becoming happy. You know, that's how you started with
it. Yes.
One challenge I see in, you know, dealing...
Better. No, that's better. I like that. One challenge, that's much better than... But... Yeah. Good. See? He's learning. That's the culture.
In counseling and guiding devotees is that sometimes, especially in a family environment, devotees aren't aware. Like you were earlier mentioning that to be Krishna, when is a couple happy? You said that when they know their duties in relation to Krishna and they do it properly, then, you know, that is what is called as a happy family life or something. And, but now you also said that, you know, if one serves Krishna, you know, when one serves Krishna, you know, that is actually happiness. So sometimes we see that people don't understand their duties properly and they think
that... And whose fault is that?
It is the fault of our training system or whatever.
Yes, so now we have counselors.
Yeah.
We'll do that. Why? Because the karmis have counselors. Which karmis? The how you say? The WASP karmis. You understand WASP? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Because they have it, that's why you are doing it. Right? You understand? That's why Nehru became a white dog in Sweden. Right? So, then... So what does that come down to? But why don't we have devotees who are training others in what is their duties? Right? Because we think Varnashram is archaic and it's not applicable. We chant Hare Krishna, we're above the rules. We don't have to follow all these rules and this and that. That's why your marriage boards don't worry as much about the compatibility as just about what you think will be cool. And therefore, we take this rich girl married to this poor guy and see, you know, aren't we so dynamic? We're breaking through all the barriers, you know, working all this and that, and right? Yeah. So, catch this. So, why aren't we training devotees in what is the culture? Because Varnashram, we didn't make it up. Karmis didn't make it up. Krishna practices it. In Vrindavan, what is Krishna? What Varna? Okay. And, okay. Then he goes to Kshatriya. Now what's his Varna?
Kshatriya.
Yes. And then when he goes there, then he goes to Sandipani Muni's ashram, and then he is a?
Brahma.
And then after that, after he graduates and all that, then he goes out and he then performs all these various tasks and that, and then gains his 8 queens. And then he lives as a grihastha. Does he get up in the Brahma Muhurta? Yes. Like that. And he's being embraced by Lakshmi. He's getting up. He's not thinking, 5 more minutes. You understand? He goes to work. So he has his ashram, he has his varna. So where does this come from? All this is, oh, we're devotees, we don't care about the rules. And then at the same time we're talking about grihastha communities? You understand? In other words, varna ashram is for grihasthas. Everybody get that through their head. Varna ashram is for grihasthas. Shall I say it again? Varna ashram is for grihasthas. Brahmacharis, what do they need to know? Right? Get up in the morning, follow the temple program, do what your authority tells you to do, you know, take prasad, you know, don't stuff too much in your locker, you know, and yeah, that's it. Right? You know, Madhvacharya gives, you know, half a page of duties of a sannyasi. Vanaprastha has a little more because there's bringing baggage from the grihastha ashram. You understand? But the whole of Manu is for grihasthas. And who's saying, oh, we don't need all this varna? Mostly grihasthas. Right? If you have this hardcore brahmacharya sannyasi who, you know, eats wood for breakfast and spits on ladies and, you know, like that. You know, so then if they say we don't care about varnashram, then, you know, okay, maybe. But you know, why is he spitting on ladies? Because he's a brahmacharya sannyasi. Therefore, that's varnashram. So you do care about it. You understand? So, human life means you follow varnashram. Until we accept this, you will not have good communities. In other words, the community you have is as good as whatever is the karmic community surrounding you. It's not any better. And so if you happen to come from some who are, you know, the burnt remnants of the Vedic culture, then you have a little bit there. And if you're coming from the West, wherever you're from, that will be the at the extent of how good your culture is. So if your divorce rate here in India is, let's say, 20%, that's as good as you can get it. Well, if you're from the West and it's 75%, then that's as good as you can get it. Unless you follow Varnashram, as Krishna said, you can't improve. We'll go to the Karmis for this and that. How great are their communities? And then the real fun part, what I find is a real misnomer is that, okay, well, we want to create community, let's look at communities. Then they'll look at the Amish or the Mormons. Right? Yeah? Right? Everybody does it, right? Now, would we be willing to follow the rules of the Amish or the Mormons? Not at all. So why are we even looking at them? Right? That's the whole thing. They say, oh, but they're in the West, they're doing it in the West. So are the Indians who go to the West. They follow whatever tradition they have. They eat their chapatis and curry in the West. They're sitting right in New York eating chapatis and curry. Right? And they go there to their university, they're at, you know, NYC, they're doing fabulous. And the honky next to them eating their sandwich is not doing so well. You understand? So, the whole point is then that when we are doing that, we're training everybody from the beginning, then it's going on. Where was the training before they got married? Why only after they get married? Now it's interesting. Why? Because it's gossip. Literally. It's gossip. I heard about once that they wanted to know, someone had a problem with, you know, they got married, the guy walked out on them and this and that. Then they want to know details. Did he have sex? How much sex? What kind of sex? Who asked those kind of questions? What human being asked those kind of questions? They were married. What do you want? But they got to know the detail. Well, if we don't know the details, we don't know how to work out, you know, if there's a better arrangement in the future. No, that's just pure 100% attachment to Prajalpa. No professionalism here. No modern, you know, we got to know the details. Oh, but she was married. You want to marry a girl that was married before or not? What does it matter what they did? Right? Are the girls all asking, well, what has this guy done, you know? Right? Is it? Are we asking the guys, well, are you looking on internet? Are you looking at porn? What kind of porn? You know, what kind of websites? Give us some names. We want to check the websites. So this is just Prajalpa. So that's why it's popular and not training in Varnashram, because Varnashram means you actually have to have the knowledge, you have to function in goodness, you actually have to be able to discuss it in a way that devotees can use it in Krishna consciousness. While being a marriage counselor, hey, it's just Prajalpa coming out my ears. Oh, did you hear about this one, and that one, and this one said this, and his wife said that, and oh my God. Does this make some sense? So my point is, why isn't that being thought of? Why aren't we training people in Varnashram? Then you have something to work with as a marriage counselor. And previously, did you have to have an Indian marriage counselor? No, anybody who was married was a marriage counselor. They're older than you and they're still married, they're a marriage counselor. And Vanaprastas, they're even better. Because they've been through it and now they're not attached. So you want to listen, they'll talk. You don't want to listen, they don't care. But grihasthas, you want to listen, they talk. You don't want to listen, they still want to talk. So they're not as good. In other words, grihasthas won't be as good a marriage counselors as vanaprasthas. You know, in general. It means you'll have grihasthas that can be very good. Right? And you can have kind of grumpy old vanaprasthas that aren't. Right? You understand? So, the whole point is it's all about education. It's not about all this modern technique and this and that. They don't know, because if they know what they're doing, why is the divorce rate 75% if they're so good? Right? Does that make sense?
The Bhaktir Samrata Sindhu, why does it then reject Varnashram or put it outside?
Reject it as what?
I mean, as in, it's not considered essential, right, as in Varnashram.
I'll answer your question on one condition. That everybody in this room understands that this particular attachment to reviling the Vedas and at every moment using your intelligence to try to throw out the Veda so that you can replace it with your modern, professional attitude has to be stopped. Right? If we're in agreement, I will answer this question. If not, I'm walking out right now. You understand? Because every question that has been asked over the last 2 days is always coming back to this. Oh, the Vedas say this, but there's all these practical things and realistic things and we're in the real world and all this kind of stuff and this is all happening like this. And why don't you know the context? Why would you take it like that? Is Varnashram one of the 9 processes of devotional service? No. So, but is marriage counseling one of the 9 processes? Okay, so we'll accept marriage counseling but not Varnashram? What does that mean? We are against the Vedas, even though we talk about it, right? But we're in favor of whatever our Western brothers are into. You understand? So at some point, you have to give up this mentality. This is the exact mentality I've been talking about for 2 days. Mm-hmm. Right? Because everyone here is smart enough to understand it and smart enough to function without it because I've seen the same group of people functioning without it. You understand? I've been coming to your yatra since the 90s. You understand? But I've noticed over the years it's getting more and more this professional way of thinking. Maharaj carries on preaching pure devotional service, but I notice his followers are getting more and more into their being professional. And at some point, you're going to trip. You know what I'm saying? Because purity is the force. Not, I got a degree in management's the force. Does that make sense? Yeah, even Yoda wouldn't buy that one as the force. That makes sense? Okay, so we have to come to that point of understanding. Because why is that brought up in that way? Know the background. Because for the Shris and the Madhvas, in the spiritual world, where are they going? Vaikuntha. Okay, now do they follow very nicely Varnashram there? It's a very major aspect of their devotional process. So for them, they define dasyam as following Varnashram, because that's how they're going to express their devotion. But for Gaudiyas, it's not. For us, Varnashram is just a tool we use like you use pots when you cook. Are your pots devotion, one of the 9 aspects of direct devotional service? No. So then why are you using them? You understand?
It's an important tool.
It's a support for. It's the secondary. You have to be able to tell the difference what's primary and what's secondary. So when anything's connected to the primary, it becomes useful. If it's not, it doesn't matter what it is, it's not. Does that make sense? So Varnashram, we don't connect, but because in the West, have they accepted Varnashram? No, they speak against it very strongly. But in the West, have they accepted Ayurveda and astrology and Vastu? Yes, so now we're willing to, with confidence, stand up and say, yeah. But, these old Ayurvedic doctors that are sitting around someplace, the West likes, doesn't like, they still know Ayurveda. But now in the modern culture, yeah, we're into it, we dabble in it because that's where it's at. That, fusion cooking, all kinds of stuff. Get a tattoo, get some earrings. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that we may start from, we're inspired by things happening in the modern environment. Fine, that's where we're preaching, that's of course. But if we maintain that attachment, that's the 10th offense to the holy name. Right? To have an attachment's not an offense to the holy name. Because you come, you're full of attachments. In fact, you know, attachment's your middle name. Right? So, but the point is, and so one can be not offensive, but when a attachment comes up, you're aware of that, and you're still hold on to it, that's an offense. So all this, oh, we're Westerners, oh, we're modern, oh, we're from Bombay, you know, we're from the big cities, you know, we can't function like the simple, poor, ignorant idiots in the villages and like that. You understand? It's a jungle. So whether it's a natural jungle, it's a cement jungle, it's a jungle. Like that. They've known that for a long time in the West, so you should start learning that. That makes sense.
Yes. How does it goes for the devotee, and what level does it works?
Which about the
Vishwam Purna Sukhayate, the state.
But what's Purna? The complete. But what's complete?
Krishna.
Krishna and the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is known as Purna. Krishna is known as Purna because they are complete. Material world's incomplete. As soon as you add Krishna, it becomes complete. Right? So the material world's only, it doesn't mean that it doesn't manifest itself temporarily. That's just the nature. It's inferior. But it becomes complete on connecting to Krishna. So as we connect it to Krishna to that degree, then we get that taste. Right? It happens simultaneously. Our taste in Krishna consciousness comes, our taste for and miseries in the material world. Because as soon as Prahlad Maharaj explains, as soon as you have material desire, from that moment, then your miseries are born at the same time. So whatever enjoyment you want, the misery that matches that is already born. Right? We're thinking, no, I'll just endeavor for this happiness, but this misery keeps getting in the way. No, they go together. They're born at the same time. You have no material desire, there are no miseries. You can say no, but we see that, you know, the Yudhishthira Maharaj and his brothers had some, did they have trouble? They were in the forest. They liked the forest. Krishna would come and visit them quite often. They sit around and talk about Krishna consciousness rather than have to worry about government. Like that. They were happy. For us, we wouldn't want to have the emperor and then lose everything and be out in the forest. You know? So That's the thing. We project that. But for the devotee, someone else may say that that's a miserable condition, but for the devotee, he doesn't notice it. He doesn't identify it that way. Prahlad Maharaj is whatever arrangement his father was making, he was just chanting and absorbed in Krishna. Whether it's, you know, stomping elephants, whether it's boiling oil, whether it's hissing snakes, or whether it's flying off of mountaintops, you know. Is that what he says? So he's just dependent on Krishna. It doesn't bother him. It's not that they can't see, but it just doesn't bother them. Just like, let's say, a man goes to work every day, and it's trouble, right? Right? Is it nice going to work? No, like that. The traffic, the this, the that, you know, all that. But let's say something's happened. He's got some really good news or that. He's really happy. It doesn't bother him at all. You know? And then, let's say he's really grumpy that day, things that even normally don't bother him, bother him. Everything bothers him. Do you understand? So it's a state of mind. That's what we're saying before. It's consciousness. You change the consciousness, you change the effect. So the material world does not affect, the modes of nature do not affect the devotee because they're above the modes. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. We think, oh, they get above the modes so nothing bad happens to them. It's just all butterflies and unicorns and rainbows. But that's why we see the stories. It's not. The point is they're unaffected. That's why we say there's no material solutions to material problems. We think heaven on earth, but that's karma. For think, oh, it's so bad, when will we get out of here? That person's, his contamination is gone. when the contaminant, no, but we can make this, we can do this, we add this, no, everything will be great. That's karma. So we have to understand as where the attachments lie. It may be one, maybe the other, maybe mixed, maybe a variety of mixes. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakura and Tattva Vivek then gives about, you know, about 26 different combinations of, you know, karma or jnana, things that are predominantly karma, predominantly jnana, but you mix them a little bit with each other, and then our levels of consciousness, you get all this kind of mix in the material world, what people call, you know, their material identity. Does that work? Yeah? Okay. Yes?
Bhagavatam describes regarding calculation of time.
Calculation of time, yes.
So, is it at the smallest fractions that are described? Is it like perceivable to devotees and how it exactly...
No, because see, that's how time works. But we may not perceive that, but that's how it works. You know, how much time it takes for the ray of light to cross over an atom. There's not a lot of time. And then you put three of those together, you get a, what is it, troopy or something, then six and two of those groups, you have six, and goes up. Where time starts for us is from the nimisha, because that we can perceive. So, all of that time from the time of the atom up to the life of Lord Brahma, that's all correct, it's all factual. And that's how time works. But for us in use, we'll call the time starting from the nimisha, that will be real. And that below that, the atomic time, we'll call that unreal because we can't technically use it. Just like Brahma's lifetime, we can't use that time. So for us, we don't use those as calculations. We use the year of the sun, year of the moon, the sidereal timings of the earth, and then, I forget what's the last one. Oh, and the civil time. Those are the ones we use. But we acknowledge and we know that all the other ones exist also. Brahma's time, Prajapati's time, the Manu's time.
Is it for some other living being?
No, but what does it matter? What are you going to do with this knowledge? This is exactly what I'm talking about. This is the Jigyasu question. You're saying not that you shouldn't answer it, but ask it. But the point is that you have to understand its connection to Krishna. Right? Because I've answered the connection to Krishna, but you're continuing to ask because you have a doubt how to use it in connection with yourself. And we've already said you can't use it. But it's just as how you get to it. In other words, the nimisha is there. How do we get to the nimisha? We get to there by atomic time comes up to there. So atomic time's real, but at the same time for us, it's not real because we can't use it. So whether there's living entities that use it or not, that I don't know. But it's not important. The sages talk about it. Right? Okay? So we worry about those other four ways to measure time. Okay?
Is nimisha a blink of an eye?
Yeah, that's how we can perceive it.
1/11th of a second.
Yeah. The 1/11th of a second, but it can be gotten to by atomic time. You add the atomic time up, it will get to that. But we know it from a blink of an eye. That's how we can perceive it. Does that make sense? So from there, then you get that, you get your seconds, that will give you your dandas, your muhurtas, then you get your days and nights, you get your pakshas, you get your months, you get your year. Right? And then you get your 100 years. Does that make sense? So like that. And then we also know that it is there, the celestial time. We know what it is, but we don't use it. We can't use the time of the demigods. You know, our 1 year is their 1 day. We can't use that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, maybe Kurmakarna can. He can sleep for 6 months and stay awake for 6 months. So he can use it, but we can't, so... And if you're up on Svalbard, then you have to put up with it, but you still will be going to bed and rising, you know, for your days 180 times in Svalbard's technically night or day. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You were mentioning about this Varnashrama has to be established to make communities stable.
Yes.
So Maharaj, in that regard, like the best... Vedic varnas, which were available, like the job profiles which people usually had,
Right.
Many times when the devotees come from, like many of the devotees in our community come from something like modern education as engineering and all, and sometimes to either administer what exactly he can do, we also are not clear. And that devotee may not be even ready to take that level of step, even if his
one. So, varnashram only means that, varna. Listen to the word, varnashram dharma. Varna, ashrama, it even has more letters, right? Okay? And what's the point? Dharma means the inherent nature, you can't change it. Right? The guy is going to go for engineering, can he go for medicine? Huh? No, he can go for engineering. An individual who's going for an engineering degree, he would not be able to be a doctor. You understand? So he has to do engineering. That's the nature. But why, when we discuss varnashram, the first thing we do is bring up varna and then try to throw the system out? Mm-hmm. Seeing that the original question was about married life, which is grihastha, which is ashram. Do we have brahmacharis in our society? Do we have grihasthas? Do we have a smattering of vanaprasthas? Do we have sannyasis? Okay. You understand? So, that's what Prabhupada established. No? And the brahminical occupations. So 5 out of 8 has been established by Prabhupada. Why would we be trying to throw out the whole thing based on Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Shudras? You understand? Why would your question start there, since the topic on the floor is how to keep grihasthas from divorcing? Does that make sense? Yes. So, therefore, as a brahmachari, can you follow the duties of a brahmachari? Can you be a menial servant who sees themselves as someone who's assisting whoever his authorities are? Can he do that? Can he be, therefore, mostly focused on the direct activities of devotional service? Hearing, chanting, remembering, you know, living in the temple, worshipping the deities. Can he do that? Yes. Then as a grihastha, then you add a wife to that. Now can you do the same thing you were doing as a brahmachari? No, because you require more facility. In other words, your locker that you keep your stuff in as a brahmachari isn't big enough for your stuff and your wife's stuff. Right? And your wife doesn't want to hang out with a whole bunch of brahmacharis, even if all the stuff could fit in there. So therefore, you need more space. And then take care of that space, who's supposed to take care of it? Right? Does that make sense? So, how much does the future parties and sub-subji cost? Right? Not so much. But grihastha, you have to pay for a touch more than that. Right? Therefore, done. Okay. A few people got it. So, you understand? So, therefore, you can do those things. Grihasthas can follow the dharma that it explains in Manu. The vanaprasthas can follow. The sannyasis can follow. So that's when we talk about community. That's the main thing. The job is going on. People are making money. They're eating. So leave that alone. Get the ashram working, because it's something you can get going, because that's more directly connected with the devotional life, because that's the spiritual duties. Varna is your social duties. Okay? Right? So spiritual duties being more important, therefore, we will see that that's established nicely. Right? Then, okay? Does that make sense? Why I'm approaching like this? So that we stop trying to throw out varnashram, because we can find something we can't understand in varna and therefore try to throw out the whole thing. Okay? We have to stop doing that. Does that make sense? Now, if we go into that, okay, we take our engineer. Okay, so what is an engineer? Okay, engineer's a smart guy. He can deal with mathematics and all that. And what will this engineer do? Okay, so we're taking electrical engineer. So he's going to come up with this electrical engineer thing. So how is that going to work?
Well,
Means how is that? How is his? How is he making money going to work? Right? Means how is he going to situate himself so that he's in a position to perform apply his knowledge so that he gets profit? Where will he situate himself? Yeah, in a job. Okay. So then, therefore, by the Vedic system, it's very straightforward. What is he? What varna? Shudra, right? So what's the rocket science here? He's a Shudra, so what's the big deal? Why are we saying, oh, but Varnashram and this and that? What is it? We don't want to be a Shudra. Why do we call them professionals? Because then they sound good. Right? They're smart, like a doctor or a lawyer, but they're smart in what way? In a Shudra kind of way. Right? Not that Shudras aren't stupid. That's how we like to see Varnashram. Shudras can be super smart. It's just that Shudras tend to identify more with their emotional needs and stuff. You know what I'm saying? An engineer, of course, is a unique, Shudra in that. They can't really, they have the same problems that all nerds have. So, yeah. You understand? Now let's say you have an electrical engineer that he'll take on projects. He'll come up with how to set up the power grid for the city or for this and that. Then, now what is it? Maybe administrator if he's running the things like that. Maybe a Brahmin because he knows the knowledge. Maybe a Vaishya because he's just using that how to make money. You understand? So it all depends upon how it's situated. The body of knowledge isn't really what defines it. It's how you're using it. It means traditionally it would define it. But in the modern age, you have a very unscientific form of Varnashram. It means everybody follows Varnashram, even the Western karmis. But it's not very scientific. Therefore, businessmen run hospitals, but like that. It's not supposed to be like that. Does that make sense? You know, all the things that are supposed to be very cheap, you know, that are brahminical activities that people, anybody can afford and therefore pay, then are taken over by the, because they're essential, they're taken over by vaishyas to make money. You go down and you go to the doctor, you know, you something wrong, the Ayurvedic doctor takes your pulse. What does that cost you? Right? And then he gives you some medicine. So it doesn't matter what you come in with, it's the same thing. But you come into the hospital, of course they don't know, but they know everything. You know, and so they give you 10 tests to take. And how much did that cost you? And how much kickback did the doctor get? You understand? So it's all business. So that's the problem. It's not supposed to be business. But it is. That's because it's mixed. But you function wherever you can. So if it's in its ideal state, you function in your natural position. And if not, then you situate yourself how you can. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am.
So therefore, then if you have an engineering degree and you can maintain your family by getting a job, then that's what you do.
As in this current situation of jobs,
right.
The sadhana process sometimes gets
wrong. Yeah, it gets wrong, but it's your choice. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to live in Bombay or that side. You could move down to Madras or Bangalore or someplace. You know, they generally tend to like sadhana. You know? You could move into the temple. You could do this and that. No, we say, oh, but you can't do it. It's the only way. No, but you've chose to live there. So then that's the way it is. Then figure out how to adjust around that. You want to be the professional, you want to move up, you want to be the big guy, you want to be recognized, so therefore you got to put in 12 to 16 hours a day. Yes, then do it. But don't stop complaining that your marriage is falling apart and there's no sadhana. You know, it's like hitting yourself on the head and complaining it hurts. Stop hitting yourself on the head. And say, oh, it's not that easy. Then it is that easy. You made the choice. So therefore, you want to do like that, then that's what you do. You take part how much you can. Know it'll be slow, and stop trying to say that you're equal with everybody else. That's also another disease of the modern thing. Everybody's equal. Brahmachari in the temple, full sadhana all day, and the grihastas, he's at home, and you know, he hardly comes to the temple because he's so busy with his economics and taking care of the family and going on vacation and all that. But, you know, they're equal and all that. You know, we want to, what do you call, spiritual equality. And stop trying to make things unequal equal. You have a grihasta who he's nicely engaged and his house is all about Krishna, then you say they're equal. But it's obvious that it's not, and then trying to, it's only prestige. That's what I'm saying. We have to give up this idea of prestige. It's not important. So we have to, if that's done, then we can go on very nicely. Then everybody according to that. Then it's about how much you're advanced. It's just that somebody is more comfortable being a brahmachari. Someone's more comfortable being a grihastha. It doesn't matter how you situate yourself. It's a matter of how then you're going to... Someone would rather be in a house. Someone likes an apartment. Someone wants to be down, you know, where you can actually walk to your apartment. Someone else wants to be on the top floor. We have to take the lift. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that it's wherever it's situated... properly. You situate yourself according to your nature, that's what Varnashram defines, and then you engage in Krishna consciousness. Because you can be Krishna conscious at all moments, but you have to know what you're doing to do that. Because everything's Krishna. We're working as if, oh, I'm living in the big bad city and it's so different from Krishna, Krishna's far away. It's, why does your car run? It's dead matter. Why does it move down the road? Well, you know, I push on the thing and this goes that and it opens this and that gas goes in here and then that fires and that comes out the back and, you know, that makes the wheels go around and the bus and the people on the bus go up and down and all that kind of jazz. But is that actually what's happening? Why does fire produce energy? Why is that you can make an engine that it can then harness energy? So it takes energy to harness energy. Right? You have a big strong man and this weak guy goes up and tries to grab him to control him. Can he do it? No. You have to have a guy of equal strength. So therefore, how powerful your engine is, you know, what it can produce is how powerful the solid, you know, how you say, the materials of the engine are. You understand? That's why it's that. So who is that energy? That's Krishna. You understand? So therefore, you can see Krishna in anything. You understand? You're a Shudra. Okay, so what does the Bhagavatam say about the duties of a Shudra? Right? You're supposed to, work for the benefit of the company. If you work against the benefit of the company, why they should pay you? Right? You should understand what's the mood of the company. Right? And therefore, in that mood, try to do that. You should deal properly with whoever the boss is and anyone connected to the boss. You know, the boss, especially the family, and then anybody else in the company because they have that connection. Right? And you do your work nicely. Right? You're committed to that, doing that work. So now, if you do all those four, will the boss consider that you're a good employee? Right? Always, 100%. Where did that knowledge come from? From the Veda. So why Varnashram's not working? You understand? If every Shudra followed that, you'd probably see the national, you know, the gross national product of every country of the world would, you know, go up 10 times or 100 times. I think studies say that in an 8-hour day, the average kind of person that puts in solid work on their computer is 15 minutes. You understand? So what happens if they put in 8 hours of work? You wouldn't need machines. Right? Because the machine does the work. The guy doesn't do the work. That's why they want the machine. If the guy did the work, why do you need the machine? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the thing. So we have to be very, very careful that we don't find these
There's a question from behind.
Okay, is that understood? So, in other words, you have to give up this thing of finding a fault by your intelligence in the logical sequence that you're actually misunderstanding. But in your own mind, you're thinking, I'm so smart. And then say, see, this whole system is bogus. You have to stop doing that. Because, practically speaking, every other purport of Srila Prabhupada is talking about the importance of Varnashram and how to follow it. That kind of repetition, you would think it would get through our fat heads that maybe we should be following it. In other words, if we put in as much energy to try to understand it as we do to try to throw it out, we'd be doing pretty good. Even if we start today trying to understand it, it'll still take us some years to get it together, because the first thing is we'll become smartest and think that the rule is what makes it happen. No, it's the proper attitude that makes it happen. Varnashram is an attitude. And then there's natural work that goes with that natural attitude. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. We have this. I don't understand the question. How do we understand all boys to be brahmacharis and all girls to be married if they get scared of increasing locker space? I'm not sure I understand it. Because I don't see how they connect. Somebody wants to refine the... Okay. But who's getting scared? See, boys are supposed to become brahmacharis. They're not born brahmacharis. They're grihastas. Then they become brahmacharis. Right? And then after being a brahmachari, they graduate, then they become grihastas. Proper grihastas. Married grihastas. Because grihasta, the natural position of a grihasta is to be married. But like a bachelor is an unmarried grihasta. Right? They're not a brahmachari. They're a grihasta. Does that make sense? Because they don't live the brahmachari lifestyle. The brahmachari works under authority. The brahmachari, the bachelor does what he likes. That's why he's not married yet, because he doesn't want to submit to the authority that is there in Grihastha Ashram. Right? That's why it says a first-class brahmachari makes a first-class Grihastha, because the first-class brahmachari accepts authority. Right? And then the first-class Grihastha accepts authority. Well, the bachelor, he's a bad brahmachari, and he'll be a bad Grihastha. You understand? We're not talking about snatakas who they were brahmacharis, they graduate, and then they're doing some further study and all that before they get married. That's another thing. That's good, because they get more qualified. What we're talking about is those who can't be brahmacharis, but actually can't be grihastas either. But eventually, at some point, they have to be grihastas because they just can't handle not being. Right? Well, so can't live with them, can't live without them. You know? No, that group we're talking about. So that's the only thing I'm seeing. And girls, then they're grihastas. Just as a matter of whether they're married or not. Does that make sense? So they could function outside of that if they come to the liberated platform and then just act like that. So then they can function outside of marriage because they're just absorbed in sadhana and stuff like that. So they don't need what marriage has to offer. So in other words, when the girl can basically live with very minimal stuff and that, and she's not worried about the social implications from that, then she can function as a recluse. So basically she goes to vanaprastha. She becomes a recluse. And then some of those may become paramahamsas, so then they're acting even beyond that. But that's more rare. But recluse they can do. Just like a brahmachari can be a naistika brahmachari, so a girl could be a recluse. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because those naistika brahmacharis, generally when they get older, they're brahmacharis, but they're kind of functioning as vanaprastas because they're independent. But they haven't been married, so we don't call them vanaprastas. But they may be living basically that lifestyle. They're independent, they do their own thing, they manage their own like that. Does that make sense? So, in other words, that same thing is there for girls if that's what they want to do. But, you know, it's up to the individual. Does that answer this question? I have no idea. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so time is up. We'll continue tomorrow. No, time's finished. Sorry. We'll continue tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavet Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.
Ms. Prabhu has a question.
Pranamai. Niti depends how you use it. It's just an assistant to that. Vigyan, that's like Vedanta Sutra. It means you're ones that are dealing with Upanishads.
In Bhagavatam, there are several chapters that describe stuff of the genealogy, family lineage of this king and that thing. So, how to understand that?
Because that's what a Purana is. It describes the lineage. That's just what it does.
And there are some chapters, like it is said that every verse of Bhagavatam that describes, glorifies Krishna. But there are certain chapters which I found very confusing when I read, like in 9th canto, 1st chapter, about one king who gets a curse from Mother Sudhima.
But that's why 9th canto is there. See, the first 6 cantos, then you get adjusted to, I follow the rules and regulations nicely, and I have to do it for Krishna. So then in the beginning, we see with Kardama, it's less about Krishna, though he's going to Krishna, but at the end of life, it's about Krishna. Then that goes up to like Priyavrata and Rishabhdev, and then that it is about, you know, he sees they're already, Paramahamsas are already absorbed in Krishna, even though they're performing. So that means you can be transcendental and perform the grihastha duties. By being a grihastha, you can become transcendental, and as being transcendental, you can still do the duties. Because some people will think, I become transcendental, I stop doing the duties. No, you continue doing the duties. But now the emphasis is on the duties. Right? And in connection with Krishna. Then we see with 7th and 8th cantos, then with Prahlad Maharaj has brought out pure devotional service, that all these duties are useless if they're not connected to Krishna. But we're still comfortable because it's all the duties being performed nicely and they're connected to Krishna. With 9th canto, then you start to get into things that are not standard. Because what they're trying to show there, it's the devotional service. It's not the ritual. Because we're saying, yes, I engage this ritual in Krishna's service, and it's about Krishna, but it's the ritual that's important. So 9th canto is showing us the ritual is not important. It's only an expression of devotion to Krishna. Now, since it's about Krishna, therefore you want the best for Krishna, so therefore you'd use what's recommended. So that's why you would use the varnashram. But it's not the varnashram that makes it perfect. It's the devotion. So 9th canto then brings out all these stories that are just not standard, just so that you know, your whole idea of this nice little package thing is turned on its head, so you understand it's pure devotion. Because if you don't get that, then when you go to 10th canto, you'll think Nanda Baba is doing Karmakanda Yajnas, you know, at Krishna's birth. Do you understand? You have to understand, no, it's about pleasing Krishna. And Krishna has a cultural form that he likes to function in. And so that includes all these yajnas and giving and charity and all that kind of stuff.
Like, with an example, if you can explain, like in 9th canto, 1st chapter, there's a story of a king.
So what's the problem with the king?
He goes to, he gets a curse for 6 months, he'll be
maimed. Yeah. Oh, it was 6 months. I always thought it was a month. Or I thought it was a paksha.
Some period of time he'll,
1 year,
okay.
He'll
okay,
be yeah. Man, he'll be woman, okay, and his citizens were disturbed with this.
Yeah, so what's the problem?
It starts here. It starts with the first chapter.
Okay, that we talk about a devotee. you know, at home he's the king, and then he goes to work and he's treated like a dog. Then he comes back home, he's a king, and he goes back to work, he's treated like a dog. Then he comes back home, he's treated like a king. Then he goes back to work, he's treated like a dog. But then when he comes home, he's treated like a king. But then the next day he goes to work, he's treated like a dog. What's the problem?
When I was reading, I couldn't connect it with, even though I read Prabhupada purport, I was still confused about this.
But what's Prabhupada talking about in the purports?
I couldn't
Prabhupada's understand. Talking in the purports. What's he talking about in the purports?
He talks about this. He was a king. I don't remember exactly what.
But you have to look at the purports. You're getting bewildered by the verse, not by the purports. You're focusing on the verse. Focus on the purports. You'll do better. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that this king, then, whether he's a male or female, he'll still have to do his service to Krishna. But when he's a female, he'll do those duties. When he's a male, he'll do those other duties. You know? Or if he's doing the same duties as the king, then, you know, it just becomes annoying to everybody, because then as a girl, then he's not going to do his king work as well as when he's not a king. That's why the people got fed up.
So what I understood is we should continue our devotional service at the same time.
Whatever your situation is, you use it in Krishna's service. Okay. But the point is it's about the devotion to Krishna that makes it special.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the situation. Right? That someone's an electrical engineer, they have a job, so therefore they're classified as a Shudra, but they're doing that, they're getting that money, maintaining the family, they're all being Krishna conscious. What's the problem? But we don't want to be called a Shudra. Oh, you know, we're not this body Prabhu. We're not into all these designations and all that. Right? Right? Isn't it? You know, so we shouldn't call him a Shudra. We just call him a professional. Like that. You know, like a sanitary engineer. We used to call him, you know, Bungies. Now we call him sanitary engineer. Right? So, you know, that sounds so much better, right? You know, so now because he's a professional, now I will marry my daughter to him, right? Yes? No. No, you still make the distinctions. You know, oh, but no, how can we, you know, do these things? We're living in the city, you know, we're living in a modern environment. Isn't that a designation? Aren't we talking about demographics here? So why is it we can use modern demographics but we can't use Vedic demographics? Seeing that the Vedic demographic is actually what makes the things work, and the modern demographics don't work so well because we're not following the Vedic standard. Brahmas don't act as Brahmas, Kshatriyas as Kshatriyas, Vaishyas as Vaishyas, Shudras as Shudras. Right? You go to a lawyer and he takes your case, you expect him to work for you, right? Means he's detached. He's just doing his job. Now, let's say you go in there and you have this big, huge, properties and all this and that, you know, from the ancestors. You just found out about it. So you're trying to get them all and try to get them all consolidated very nicely. And that means then you have to go to some, you know, the municipality, get this paper put in, that paper put in, and all these things. Because putting in the paper, then now it becomes established that it's yours, okay? Now, the lawyer then helps you with all the things, gets all the details and all that. He'll take care of all the legalities of it. He goes and hands in the papers and puts everything in his name. Do you like that? No, why not? But if that was a businessman, you'd understand it. But because it's supposed to be a Brahmin, you don't understand it. So that's the thing. They're not following what they should be doing. That's the problem.
Maharaj, we know that Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy is the highest. But I just wanted to ask you this thing, that in academic circles or even in the outside world, whenever they talk about these three darshanas like Dvaita, Advaita and Vishishta Advaita often. So Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Maharaj, there seems to be a lot of ignorance about this and all. So why has this happened? Because although the philosophy is the highest, was it due to some historical thing or like that? I mean,
means this is like this. Now, if you're a materialist, of all these darshans, which one can you understand easily? Because it's still within materialism.
Advaita.
Right? Because it's just, and it's just, it's one. And so, when Ramanuja in his preaching, then he converted so many, you know, good, solid, intelligent people. But those who were stubborn and attached to their impersonal philosophy that wouldn't take up the Vaishnava understanding, then, because his was Vishishtadvaita, right? So it's purified oneness. So there's oneness. So oneness is okay. So they have their own interpretation of oneness.
Yeah.
You understand? So then in taking that up, then Madhvacharya comes along and he doesn't entertain anything that's one. Nothing. You know? So therefore it's Dvaita. So then for someone who has that an attachment to it, it'll be easier to understand Dvaita than the other philosophies. Right? And Vishishtadvaita is just well known because, you know, they're big. They had a big, big organization and all that. Nimbarkas, Vishnuswamis, you don't hear so much about them. Right? Because of the formality, the majesty, then you hear about it. So then that would be fine. But most schools, if you go, if they have comparative religions and all that, they deal with the Hindu, they just know Shankara. They don't even know Madhva. You understand? So then even amongst the four darshans of the Vaishnavas, still then Achintabheda Veda Tattva, that's beyond their understanding. Because you're dealing with all these things simultaneously. So that's why it's the hardest. It means it's the highest. You know, it's like, does that make sense? So it's
hard. So when mere popularity is taken, the...
Yeah, when mere Shudra and Vaishya perspective is taken, then yes, we can become bewildered. But the point is if we know our philosophy and we go in and discuss it, then why won't people be impressed?
Yeah.
And so gradually it works. It takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. You know? Does that make sense? Right? I mean, they're still working with Darwin, even though people in the field of Darwin's field then know that you cannot prove Darwin's theory by their field. And their field's the only one that works with it. So, that means there's zero chance in anything else. But because of attachment, because they want to be God, not God be God, then, you know, because point is if God did create it and this is in, and these things are happening according to the laws of nature that God controls, it's not by chance, then that means that there's an actual universal order that I have to follow. Does anybody want to follow someone else's order? No, they want to make up the rules themselves. Because we'll say, it's science. It has to be proven. At the same time, they say it's by chance, which means it can't be proven. You understand? So, in other words, if you're presenting something that they don't like, then they use whichever one that works for them. You know? You're talking something that's sentimental, you know, God and this. Oh, no, it's all science and this and that. When you say you can't even prove anything like that, it's an open, because it's by chance. So in other words, it's just a way to keep themselves in authority. You keep getting the grants that way. Because if you're not in authority, no grants, you don't pay your bills, and that means you will be working down at McDonald's flipping burgers. You know? And being a nerd, they don't have the skill, so every time they flip it ends up on the floor, so... You know, they're not strong enough to be a garbage collector. You know, they can't clean the house efficiently because they keep stopping and thinking about how the universe is structured. So people yell at them, and you know, so it's just, yeah, they got to keep the grants going. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Water.
Water.
Whatever success or failures we get in our devotion, the material part of it, like. The success of preaching or the facilities which come with the donation.
So why is preaching material?
No, not preaching material. Like the people who come, how many people start pick up by your preaching?
No, but these are symptoms of something. It's just how you're using. What's your perspective? Oh. If your perspective is about pleasing Krishna, so if more people come, then that's good because it pleases Krishna. If it's just a matter we're taking it, no, but if more people come, we'll be more respected, and therefore then like that, then you have a problem, unless it's actually you understand the administrative field. But most people just take it that numbers is good and low numbers is not good.
Is it the donation somebody attracts? Like everybody puts the same effort. One has to make, let's say, life members.
Right.
Somebody gathers more donations.
You're not from the Chopati scene.
Yeah. Pune.
Pune. You may have life members?
Example.
Yeah.
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Since how long?
Forever.
Chopati. I asked once. I asked him, he says, do you have life members? He says, no, we only have devotees.
From Pune. Pune I got in 2004.
Oh, they started life membership.
Is there from 1980 is there?
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
1984 something from it is there.
Oh, okay. It's always been there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that part of it is based on the previous karma or
becoming a results. Life member is based on previous
karma. How many life members one can make?
So you have to go to the astrologer before going. Will this guy become a life member? Well, according to his piety, he can only become an installment life member. So karma, what has karma got to do with it?
Good karma, bad karma. Good karma means two preachers are preaching. Somebody is very successful, is seen that he has got a big center and a lot of people following.
Yeah, but that's because he's pleasing Krishna. And the other person's not. It has nothing to do with your material skill. You can use the material skill to advantage, to help, but it's not because he has material skill. That's why it works so nicely.
Not even previous karma, last life.
But what has it got to do with that? See, because if you're going to go on that, then that means I don't have the karma, therefore I can't preach and I can't do this and that, therefore I it's all right that I just sit around and do nothing. You're supposed to take whatever your nature is and engage in Krishna service, because we work on Krishna karma.
We don't even focus on reasons.
We will focus on the results because the results are for Krishna, but only because they're results for Krishna. Because if you don't focus on the results, how do you know if the action you're performing is right? And the action you're performing is based on the knowledge. Right? So you have to see that that line is working. But the point is because it's about pleasing Krishna, you have to see the attitudes right, otherwise it won't please Krishna. Yeah?
Is it that the right attitude always brings the good success in material terms?
Material terms follow, because material terms are following devotional service. It's like this. I cook for Krishna, okay? The cooking process that you're using is the mechanics of cooking, so it's a material knowledge, right? But I'm going to offer this to Krishna, right? So I'm just engaged in devotional service. So why am I trying to cook the preparation nicely? Because it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? And so, therefore, since trying to please Krishna, I follow the rules of cooking properly. Therefore, will I not get a good preparation? So it's because of devotional service I'm getting a good preparation. We could say it's because of my knowledge. But so many times a good cook can cook something really bad.
Let's take example of singing. Someone may be very highly devotional but may not be able to sing properly.
But their singing is pleasing to Krishna.
Yeah, so.
But it may not be pleasing to everybody else. That's why you get the one who could sing to please, because everybody else tends to be a little more.
Yeah, so the one who is devotional but not able to sing properly, he will not get more crowd.
No. But let's say it's Mangalartik. Are we worried about crowd?
No, we are not worried about karma.
Yeah, so then he can sing at other times. But if you're doing a program, trying to attract people, you're doing a pandal program, then you'll pick someone who can sing nicely, but has the right attitude. If it comes down to a person who can sing nicely but has a bad attitude, then, and you have someone who can sing nicely and has a good attitude, you pick the one that has a good attitude. Right? But now, if the organizers know that people are attracted by the nice singing, we have someone who can sing nice, but he's a total materialist. But we'll get him to sing for that, because he'll just do that. And then the rest of the program, once they're listed, then we'll control everything else. So you can do that, but you have to understand, you can't place it as equal. You understand the person's position. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for big festivals like that, I think Gaur Purnima Festival and that, they would hire these, arisen, quote-unquote, Brahmins, for cooking. Right? There's a saying that the Arisen cooks become Brahmins at Kharagpur. You understand? Because when they're taking the train from, Orissa up to Calcutta, then as they pass the Kharagpur, now they're out of Orissa, no one knows them, they put on a Brahmin thread. Now when they arrive in Calcutta, they're the big Orissan Brahmin, cook. Like that. So he would use them because they could cook on that kind of scale and the devotees couldn't. If devotees could, why would we have them do it? But if they can't, we will hire them to do it. But we're going to offer it to Krishna. We're going to create the menu. We're going to see that everybody's doing. So you have to see is the control of the whole thing, what's there. So if someone else is there and just go out, okay, now sing here and then stop. But if now he's going to do this whole thing and try to control and speak his own philosophy, then better you have the guy that can't sing.
Bhagavad Gita says the result depends on the five things. Like one person endeavor is one thing. So the process I may be, for pleasing Krishna, I may be using the best process, but still the other factors are there. So are they controlled by the previous karma of a person?
Why are you so worried about your previous karma? You're looking for an excuse why either you're so good or not so good.
No, somebody had a question.
But I'm just saying that it's been answered. Mm-hmm. But we don't want the answer. What if I said yes? No, any more questions? No, because that's what you want to hear. But if I say no, no, but. So if I say no, or I say it's about Krishna consciousness, you'll keep asking until I say yes. You understand? It's just like the kid comes out, asks the mommy, can you have this? No. Goes to the father, can I have this? No. It just keeps going, they'll keep going until they go to the grandmother. Can I have this? Oh, of course, yeah.
In different angles, Maharaj.
Different angles. But you haven't understood the first angle.
I understood, Maharaj.
You understand Krishna karma.
Yes, if we are trying to please Krishna,
yes,
automatically we'll do our everything effort nicely, and
yes,
if we're done nicely, automatically.
And so therefore the result depends on Krishna. What has it got to do with your karma? Right? Arjuna's out on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Is there anyone who can defeat him? No.
Krishna will manage everything. Because we are pleasing Krishna, so why not?
Yeah. Now, when he was taking the queens from Dwarka up to Hastinapur, how did that work out for him? And who came and attacked him?
So Krishna is controlling everything.
Cowherd men with sticks. Right? Yeah.
So that part doesn't apply to devotee, actually, what I understand now. Is it right?
It doesn't. It's Krishna karma. But it doesn't mean that you don't have a nature that you use in Krishna service. Just like, let's say, we have a korai. Okay? So, how do we use it for Krishna?
Fry
things. Okay, let's say we have a knife. How do we use that for Krishna?
Cutting.
We have a grater.
Grater.
Okay, we have a fire. Okay, now I am not this body, right? I'm the soul. I'm not the fire, I'm not the pot, I'm not the grater, I'm not the knife. So because I am not the body and all that, therefore, I don't have to follow any of the rules. I can use the fire as the fan, I can use the knife to try to get the fire to work, I can use the grater to, boil my water in for the rice, and I can use the pan to sit on. He understands. So that's the whole thing, is we use this, we're not the body, to throw out the whole varnashram. But the point is, your body still is the body. By saying I'm not the body, do you become more smart? Does it change? Do you become taller, more handsome? I'm sitting there and I look like one of the regular old guys on the street, and as soon as I go, hey, I'm not this body, I'm the soul, I'm transcendental, you suddenly look like Shah Rukh Khan. Like that? Yeah? No, it does not work like that. You still have the same elements to work with. The conditioning is the conditioning. You're not the conditioning. So the point is, because you think you're the conditioning, you may be inspired to use it or not. But because you're not the conditioning, now if it needs to be used, you can use it. If it doesn't need, you won't. But if you think I'm that, even though I shouldn't be using it, I do use, and even I should be using it, I don't. So that's why the devotee, by understanding they're not the body, now they can actually practice their own conditioning properly. While before that, they can't. You understand? So all this thing is, oh, we're not the body, and throw out Varnashram. This is for those who are, who misunderstand what's going on. And the worst part is they're misleading others. They can't explain it. You know, you say, oh, we don't need this. Explain why we don't need this. You can't explain why we don't need it, then how can you say we don't need it? What does it do? What is it for? What's its function? How do you know it does, you don't need it? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And
yeah, so that's the whole thing.
One more question. The Brahmana accepts whatever comes in charity. So if one Brahmana needs a cow, should he ask or he should just...
He can. I mean, it just depends upon what mode of living he's using. Right? So if he's using Rita, then he just gleans from the fields and stuff. You know, what's left over, what no one wants, because then no one's going to complain. Right? Amrita means he just sit there and just whatever Krishna sends, that's what he'll get. Right? Then what is it? Mritya. Then his death means he begs. So he can beg. It's just that they may give, they may not. So you might get insulted, you might not get insulted. Pramrita, he may work and live by farming. Like that. Though technically it's not his job, but he could do it. You know, or Satyanrita, you know, he may live by trade. You know, like that. So he can use any of these. Suavrita, you know, working for others, generally he avoids that. But as Prabhu pointed out, nowadays, and it's really hard to avoid, because Vaishyas try to make a monopoly of everything. So, does that make sense? Yeah.
And regarding the quality and quantity of the last class, that Prabhupada wanted us to work on both. So in the Varnashram system, it is whose responsibility? Brahmana's responsibility to work on quality? And
no, Brahmins always work on quality.
Okay.
And then they, by training Kshatriyas, they can produce a protective environment in which then everybody else can thrive. But it's the Brahmins who are teaching everybody. Because they teach the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. So then they all know what's proper. You know, what's the standard. Otherwise, then you know, for the Kshatriyas, just power is all that's important. For the Vaishyas, the prophets, all that's important. Does that make sense? So without understanding, you know, devotional service, the proper qualities for devotional service, then the knowledge and skills to be used in that way, that's how it goes down. So the devotion's first, the qualities are next, and then the skills and knowledge are what's below that. Does that make sense?
Well, regarding the calculation of time, these chapters which are there in Bhagavatam regarding time factor, what is the practical application for us in... like the relevance of time factor in...
We know how small we are. See, it's like this. We're on Bharata Varsha, Bharata Khanda, right? So that means we're on Bharata Varsha, right? But we're only on Bharata Khanda, which is 1/9 of Bharata Varsha. So what we know is this planet with the 7 islands and 7, that's only Bharata Khanda. Right? There's another 8 parts of this Varsha that we don't even know about. You understand? Then, that's 1/9. There's 8 other Varshas. You know, with Meru in the middle. And that makes up Jambudvipa as 1 island. And Jambudvipa is the smallest of 7 islands. So how big are we?
Extremely small.
Yeah, so these things put things in perspective. And then you know where it is. So when Arjuna went to the northern Kurus, he went all the way the other side of Jambudvipa. That's why Duryodhana couldn't believe it. No one's ever done that. Everybody's always worked within the Bharata Khanda. You know, he goes beyond. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. You know. Because it's Krishna's universe, so we can see how Krishna's universe is arranged. And then from that, then you appreciate the time, therefore how the moon works, how the sun works, their relationship, that's how you get titis, right? The difference between the sun and moon, when it's 1 degree difference, that's a titi. Right? Does that make sense? When the sun moves 1 degree in his own path, that's a solar day. when he moves from sunrise to sunrise, that's a civil day. Right? The moon rises from when it rises to when it says that that's its own. Also, when it moves, it's, I think it's 1 degree. Then that's its time. You understand? So you have all these different things. That's why there's differences in all these. So we think that there's only the civil day, 365 days. We think that's it. And the Veda is mentioning 360, because that's the solar day, because time goes off the sun, right? It's the ray of the sun that does. So you can calculate all the others from that. And so that's why it is 360. He moves 1 degree in his own path forward every day, though he goes backwards, you know, in a civil day. So 360 degrees. So if there's 365 degrees in a circle, then we'll accept the civil day as the main standard. But since there's only 360, we'll have to accept the Vedic standard.
Maharaj, like in our own practice and when we are preaching to people, this thing comes up that whatever you're hearing, we're unable to retain it. Like understanding comes by...
So you just keep hearing it. That's all. And hearing about Krishna is nice, so it's not a bad thing. It's just like, okay, today you ate some chapatis. Do you retain it? No. But so do you mind eating more chapatis tomorrow? Mm-hmm. So what's the problem?
It's when we are in need of that knowledge, that time we are unable to use it for Krishna.
So but what's the principle of the knowledge? You know the principle that you can always use, even if you can't remember the knowledge. The knowledge, the facts, those are simply the form that the knowledge itself is using. See, unless when we can cut through what we think is real, then we can get into what's more real. Right? You understand? Because this whole metaphysical platform, that's where the professional level is. But the actual top level is the devotion to Krishna. You understand? So it's beyond the metaphysical. But we're so caught up that the physical is so important as the Westerners define it, but the metaphysical is so much more developed. So the principles of it you can always understand. That's why when you study you try to understand the principle. But then you can apply the detail because it changes. Like if you understand the principles of cooking, when I go into the kitchen, whatever is there, I can cook it. Right? But if I don't know the principles of cooking, I only know recipes, I go into the kitchen, if everything's not there, I cannot cook. That's the problem. You learn this Western knowledge, you know recipes. You do not know the science. They'll call it a science, but it's in no way a science. We can explain their knowledge as a science. They absolutely can't. So that's the whole thing. We know the science. They don't. We're the scientists. They're the sentimentalists. That's the mode of ignorance. It switches everything around.
They want to control.
Yeah, they want to control. That makes sense. I think we should stop now. I've got other things happening.
Thank you.
Shri Prabhupada ki.